Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The one-year anniversary of the earthquake in Haiti arrives with a lot of frustration. Nearly 1 million people are still living in tents, cholera, suffering. Americans gave $2 billion. The country is still devastated. This hour on Point, a year after the quake, what's happened with the relief? What's happened with Haiti? You can join the conversation. Did you send money to Haiti? What should we see by now? Is it there? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here it was a year ago, a woman crying in the streets of Port-au-Prince in the aftermath of that 7.0 earthquake. Mayhem. Here's Bob Poff, Services Director for the Salvation Army in Port-au-Prince when the big quake struck on January 12th, 2010.
I watched the buildings pancake down one on top of another. It was absolutely the most horrific thing I've ever seen.
Pancaking down one after another. The weekend after the quake, crowds here gathering at the gates of the National Palace collapsed in Port-au-Prince looking for clean drinking water a year ago. And now, a year later, what is it today? Joining us now from Port-au-Prince, Haiti, is NPR's Mexico Bureau Chief Jason Beaubien. He's spent a lot of time in this last year in Haiti. Jason, thank you very much for being with us. Hello, Jason, are you there? We'll try once more in just a second to get NPR correspondent Jason Beaubien from Port-au-Prince in Haiti. With us as well right now from Washington is Sam Worthington, Chief Executive of Interaction. It's the largest alliance of U.S.-based international non-governmental organizations, NGOs, whose members include Oxfam, Mercy Corps, CARE, Save the Children, World Vision, and more. He's just returned from Haiti. Sam Worthington, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we know a lot of relief aid has poured into Haiti. We also see the images coming out of Haiti, and it looks like an awful lot of trouble still there. And you've got critics of the whole NGO movement. If you come to Haiti now, it looks like the earthquake happened yesterday, says one here with a group called HaitiWatch.org. What's the state of relief a year after the earthquake, Sam?
I think one has to recognize that progress has been made, but there is a long, long way to go. There is still tremendous suffering among the Haitian people. There's still, I guess the latest number we're looking at, about 800,000 people in tents.
Mm-hmm.
So we are talking about a long-term, difficult recovery. Some individuals are clearly seeing progress made, whether it's access to food, water, shelter, and so forth. But for many, life remains difficult. And by difficult, I mean the reality of living in a small tent, of trying to find food, not having a job, and limited prospects for the future. That challenging reality of the Haitian people is really daunting at this point in time.
Millions of people around the world, many, many, many Americans contributed to help the Haiti relief. I mean, those were just absolutely heart-wrenching images and realities we saw coming up from Haiti a year ago. How much money in total has actually come in to the country through relief agencies and I guess through governments too? What's been the flow from outside the country in?
I don't have the total number. It's roughly around $5 billion. The latest one, people are quoting $2 billion from the American people. I do know that in terms of the American public giving to the nonprofits that are our members, they gave $1.3 billion. Of that amount, $531 million has been spent basically by the end of October. And one of the challenges you're facing is, do you spend all your money on people in camps? The burn rate we're finding in camps is very high. This is providing latrines, water, sanitation, health services, and so forth. But supporting people in camps is not rebuilding Haiti. Ultimately, resources need to be set aside and have been set aside to build schools, clinics, and so forth. And it's that transition from having, in essence, trying to maintain people after a disaster to the beginnings of recovery is the point we're at this point in time.
One of your own member organizations, Oxfam, very critical as we approach the anniversary here, saying that there's just been a year of indecision and it's left Haiti's recovery on hold. Sam Worthington in Washington, please stand by. I think we have NPR's Jason Beaubien now from Port-au-Prince in Haiti. Jason, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Sorry about that.
No problem. Thank you very much for being with us, Jason. We're looking at the impact of all the relief work that's been done. A year on, you're in Haiti. You spent a lot of time in Haiti. We saw the terrible images a year ago, and now we're reading people saying if you go to Haiti, it looks like the earthquake happened yesterday. What does it look like, feel like now, Jason? Does it feel like a year of multi-billion dollar effort has produced something in the way of relief and rebuilding?
It certainly doesn't feel like all of those billions of dollars have had an impact here at this point in time. I do have to say that in the last couple of months, it has felt like things are getting better, that the streets are now completely clear of rubble, that you can move around more, that life is more getting back to normal. But this idea that there has been this huge effort to rebuild here, to reconstruct, it doesn't even feel like rebuilding has really started yet. You know, you talk to people about how much rubble has been removed, and, you know, about 25 or 20% of the rubble has actually been taken out at this point. You drive through neighborhoods, some neighborhoods still feel entirely like the earthquake happened yesterday. Almost all the buildings in the neighborhoods are collapsed and have, you know, no one's even started to remove them yet. So there's very much a sense that things have a long, long way to go.
The physical infrastructure clearly is a long way from where it needs to be. What about the economy? In and between all that rubble, it has an economy that works and employs and feeds people reemerged, or are people still dependent on, you know, relief handouts from the back of a truck?
I mean, a lot of people have gone back to doing what they used to do before, which is being merchants, selling things in the streets. A lot of that has restarted, and restarted sort of right away. The informal economy was a huge part of the Haitian economy before the quake, and it's gone back to that. And people have sort of reset up the informal economy just right around the rubble, right around the broken down buildings. So a lot of that has gotten going again, but certainly jobs is one of the huge problems facing Haiti right now. There are so many people who are unemployed. You know, there are offers of, they call it cash for work, which is to work for $6 a day. You have lines of people lining up to work for $6 a day. There's more people that want those jobs than possibly can get them. Usually it's shoveling rubble, cleaning the streets, things like that. People are desperate for solid work that actually earns them some income, some cash on a daily basis. And that is going to be one of the big challenges facing Haiti, is how to rebuild this economy in amongst trying to do the reconstruction.
Jason, we have Sam Worthington with Interaction with us in Washington, but you're there in Haiti and have been a lot. When you talk with relief workers, and hordes of them from around the world have come in and blessed them for doing that, but what's their level of satisfaction or frustration with the tempo of progress in bringing this country back, if that's the right phrase?
I think there's a widespread recognition amongst people that I talk to that there's still a long way to go, that there's a lot of frustration, that things have been slower than they want. At the same time, you know, individual groups have accomplished incredible things. I mean, there has been some great individual programs, some building of shelters, some distributing of tarps, distributing water, doing things that are not sexy, just getting water to the camps every day. They've done that. They've gotten clean water to these camps. The sanitation is actually better in the camps than it is outside of the camps. But these are sort of just basic life-saving kind of things. And so I think that there's a recognition among people that there's a lot more to do. And I think there's a frustration that things have been moving slowly. That's sort of my sense. I think people are realistic that things weren't moving fast enough, and there's a great hope that in 2011 things are really going to get going here.
So, Jason, if you could speak directly to one of those many, many, many Americans who sent, you know, cash for relief, maybe texted it down there, can you say to them, could you say to them at this point, looking around Haiti where you are now, That was money well spent, or the jury's still out? How should Americans feel about what's happened, anybody in the world, what's happened with the relief money that's gone to Haiti?
I mean, I think people who give money have a right to hold those people accountable who get the money. At the same time, I don't think that anyone individually is to blame here. I think there's been a lack of coordination of the overall relief effort, and I think that that has hurt things moving forward. And you know, one of the questions is, well, what should people have done? Not give, not try. People are here trying. People are definitely trying. But I think that even with so many people trying so hard, things have moved slowly and moved slower than most people want. So I think you're probably better off having given that money, and you know, maybe it didn't do quite as much as you want, but at least you were making an effort. And I think that that also meant a lot to the Haitian people, the outpouring of support by people from all over the world in the months and this last year has really been a source of support for the Haitian people. And I think they're very worried that in 2011, people might not be there, that the world community is not going to be as willing to stand with them. And that has really been sort of something that is propping up the Haitian spirit, that has been offering people great hope, knowing that the outside world is there and is trying to help.
Jason Beaubien in Port-au-Prince, Haiti for NPR. Jason, an old friend, thank you very much for joining us for a few minutes today. Really appreciate it. Be safe and thank you for your reporting there, Jason.
You're more than welcome. Thank you, Jeff.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about Haiti, 1 year tomorrow after the great quake, January 2010. Looking at what's happened with Haitians, for Haitians, with all the billions in relief there, what's happened with the Haitian people and where things stand now in Haiti. We all remember those scenes a year ago, search and rescue workers. Here's just one example, working to save a survivor from a crumbled cement building among thousands and thousands flattened by the earthquake in Haiti.
We need more people down here. We need more people down here.
And survivors in the streets of Port-au-Prince, Haiti, in the aftermath of that 7.0 earthquake, here are their sounds. Now, it's a year on. Billions have flowed into Haiti. What's the result of all that relief work? Did you chip in? Text $10. Write a check for $100. What relief and rebuilding did you expect by now? What's fair? What's reasonable to expect? Are you shocked to see people still living under tarps, in tents? Is that just the way it goes in Haiti? Could it, should it be better by now? We're going to hear some more very important voices on this Haiti front in this hour. Sam Worthington is with us right now from Washington, chief executive of Interaction. It's the largest alliance of U.S.-based international NGOs whose members include Oxfam, Mercy Corps, CARE, Save the Children, World Vision, and more. He's just come back from Haiti. And Sam, I wish you'd give us a little rundown here on what has been achieved, what's been accomplished by all the relief work and dollars that have flowed into Haiti, and by your lights, what hasn't?
I think, thank you. I think Jason did a very good job of sort of framing the reality that we're facing right now, and it shows a reality that really needs to evolve over time. It's important to look at it sort of in three phases. The first was getting people out from under rubble, that tremendous effort to save lives. The next phase, which in fact we're still in many ways, is how to care for a very large population. Originally it was about 1.8 billion. Now it's down to about 800,000
individuals. 1.8 million and 800,000, surely.
1.8 million. Sorry, mm-hmm. Didn't mean that. So 1.8 million who were homeless, who needed some shelter. It's providing tarps. It was water, getting access to sanitation, providing food. I witnessed a Catholic Relief program with the 82nd Airborne standing on, all managed by Haitians themselves to feed 60,000 people for 3 months. That effort of moving the sludge out of the camps, of draining the ditches, establishing tents, the cost of that effort alone has been tremendous. And yet, as we know, that is not enough. And the broader phase, which we're in many ways just beginning now, is rebuilding Haiti family by family. For nonprofits, that's sort of the level we look at things. It's helping move poor people who are in camps in areas that where if the rain starts, you need to move them out because they'll be washed away, to resettle them somewhere else. and is beginning the process of establishing some degree of normalcy. We have a long way to go. We're seeing some glimpses of positive momentum. About 90% of the children who were in school before the earthquake are now in school under tents in most cases, though some schools are starting to be built. I know, talking of Save the Children, they're planning on building 54 schools and starting that whole process. But even then, recognizing that before the earthquake, half of the school of children were not in school. So we don't want to return to just where we were beforehand. And on the shelter side, it is a long uphill battle. We're seeing some momentum, as Jason mentioned, in recent months. And I think November was roughly about 19,000 temporary shelters. These are wooden structures of tin roofs with straps to hold the roofs down to prevent them being blow off in a hurricane. And we're now up from 19,000 to about 31,000. So you're getting a sense of momentum. But all this rebuilding, sort of family by family, want us to recognize that the rebuilding itself is being done by the Haitian people. I walked through a neighborhood and saw, you know, wheelbarrow after wheelbarrow. There's no room for cars to go. Of Haitians taking rubble out, in this case in a Catholic Relief Services project in Delma 62 community, where residents have an income-based effort where they crush the rubble into sand and gravel, and then they sell the sand and gravel to be used for the platforms of temporary shelters. And it's the money they get from the sale of that rubble that actually pays them something.
That sounds like a great idea, you know, on a sort of day-by-day basis. Pull back up with us. $2 billion from Americans went in there, much more from others around the world as well. You know, what's your assessment of how well the NGOs, your member groups, for example, have done? I mean, what grade do you give yourself on this year of work? You've got one of your own members, Oxfam, saying, you know, this has been a year of indecision and it has put Haiti's recovery on hold.
No, I would agree that the looking at from a sort of grade for the recovery, I think it's even too early to give people a grade. We're too early in the process, and that was the slow momentum has all sorts of reasons. Mm-hmm. On the relief effort, compared to the tsunami, much higher level of coordination with government, with the UN, among the different NGOs, among different donors. Clearly, a many lessons learned from the tsunami that were applied. The scale and the magnitude of this in many ways have been more daunting and broader than the international community has been able to cope with. We have a global structure to respond to this, but in many ways I think we were not up to the task because the job is simply too big, particularly to achieve in a tight time frame. I think we need to look into both 3 to 5 years.
Yep.
And the challenge then, of course, is you have people suffering all the while that we have time not on their side.
Sam Worthington, stand by for just a moment. Here we go, back again to last January in that terrible aftermath of all the pancaking. Here are looters fighting over items in the street of Port-au-Prince a year ago. And here, just a couple of months ago, in Gonaville, in northern Haiti, a man talking to the BBC about the cholera epidemic that had emerged almost a year later there.
We are getting together to pray, as no one has come to help us. Several people who were infected here have died, so prayer is the only answer that we have left.
Still struggling, still suffering in Haiti. Sam Worthington, please stand by in Washington. Joining us right now from Miami is Marlene Bastier. She's founder and executive director of Haitian Women of Miami, co-founder of the Haitian American Grassroots Coalition. Marlene, thanks for coming back to the show. We talked with you almost a year ago. Here we are on the anniversary nearly of the earthquake. I know you're in very close touch with many people in Haiti. What are you seeing? What have you seen in terms of the pace and scale of relief and rebuilding, Marlene?
Well, thank you so much, Tom, for having me. Mm-hmm. 1 year later, mm-hmm. I must tell you that a year ago, while many people were saying, you know, were wondering, you know, what has befallen on Haiti? What other calamities should we be expecting? Are we being punished? But many had hope that for once, after the earthquake killed 300,000 people, that our leaders would get together, develop a strategy to put Haiti on the road to development. But sadly enough, on the radio throughout the last week and this week coming into the first year anniversary, all we've heard are complete disappointments. People wondering, are we going to be in these conditions forever? Because people really had great hopes. One year later, $10 billion pledge, very little of that money has been dispersed. Many of the organizations that raised the money on behalf of Haiti, they are hoarding the money. We have 140 donor countries pledging funds that have not been disbursed. We still have 1.5 million people living under over 2,000 tents. And the situation is bleaker a year later.
Marlene, where do you put responsibility for that? You were complaining about our leaders, and what do you mean there? Do you mean Haiti's leadership or international leadership? What?
Well, it starts with our leaders in Haiti. I've given interviews for the past year to many mediums, local, national, and international. And I don't believe that the state of Haiti, and I say state because I'm talking about the Haitian government, the private sector, they all make up the state. I think the Haitian leaders have failed the Haitian people because, Tom, listen, I mean, after a crisis of the magnitude that occurred January 12, 2010, our leaders needed to sit down together, open a national dialogue, form that dialogue, develop a strategy, right?
But things have hardly gone in that smooth direction. I mean, the politics have been so fierce and difficult in Haiti in this last year. It's been anything but a harmonious coordination.
Exactly. There's been a lack of leadership, right? And now we not only have the political instability. I mean, we had an election that occurred November 28th, and we still do not have the results. And we have an imported cholera epidemic, so the Haitian people are just tired.
Marlene, please stand by in Miami, and Sam in Washington. Also joining us right now from Washington, D.C. is Tom Adams. He oversees Washington's reconstruction plans in Haiti as the State Department's special coordinator for Haiti. Tom Adams, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for having me.
You've got a big view that goes beyond NGOs to the countries around the world, the U.S. foremost, that have contributed a lot in this last year. What's your assessment of how relief and rebuilding have gone for those many, many Americans who have chipped in and who chip in through their tax dollars? How should they assess? What should they think about how it's gone, how it's going, Tom?
Yes, Americans were very generous with Haiti. Half of all American families contributed money for its reconstruction.
It's incredible.
Everybody saw the pictures on TV mm-hmm. And wanted to help, and they have helped. The international community has also stepped up to help. During the rescue operation, it was really an unprecedented rescue operation. That stabilized the country. A lot of contributors. The U.S. Was a major contributor, as you know. We took over the running of the airport. The military came in. We deployed 7 urban search and rescue teams and saved the lives of about 130 people there. We have instituted feeding programs, shelter programs, and the country has been was stabilized. I think what people need to realize is even before the earthquake, though, Haiti was in trouble. Mm-hmm. It had some of the worst statistics in the hemisphere of poverty, of malnutrition, of infant mortality, and so there was a big challenge in Haiti even before the earthquake.
So it's a tough context, but still, you've been in this business for a long time. There are yardsticks for assessing how relief and rebuilding efforts have gone. Now, given this may have been the toughest possible environment in the entire Western Hemisphere, yet here's all this effort and here's all this money. How has the execution of relief and rebuilding stacked up against the outpouring that came in the aftermath of the quake, Tom?
Well, if you look at other disasters of similar scale, tsunami and other things, generally speaking, the reconstruction efforts don't hit their stride till about 18 months after the disaster. And as Jason pointed out from Port-au-Prince, in recent weeks, you're seeing the pace of activity by NGOs and others pick up. There have been more tea shelters built, more rubble removed, and things are starting to pick up. I'm not saying we're anywhere near where we want to be right now, and I can understand how the people of Haiti expect more.
What about Marlene's question on the disbursement or the delivery on pledges? Was it $10 billion pledged globally, and how much of that has actually been delivered? Do you know?
Right. At the donors conference at the end of March of 2010, countries pledged almost $10 billion for Haiti. Now that was not all money to be spent in the next year. Those were multi-year pledges by countries. And about $5.5 billion of that was what we would call 2010-2011 pledged. And so far, according to the Office of the Special Envoy for Haiti, Bill Clinton's office in New York, about 63% of that has been dispersed, which is not a bad rate at all, considering how difficult it is to get things done in Haiti.
Sam Worthington, what about the complaint? You heard Marlene voice it, and others have as well, that NGOs are quote-unquote hoarding money that was raised in response to the terrible tragedy last year. What about that?
Well, different nonprofits have different missions. If you are International Medical Corps and you specialize in clinics, you've gone up and set up cholera clinics and responded, a chance of walking through some of them, and your response is immediate. If your organizations, whether it's CARE or World Vision, that have a longer-term mission, most of those organizations have broken their resources into two pools, one for relief and one for longer-term reconstruction. And you then spend time. The example I gave earlier, 54 schools, that is Save the Children, working with 54 different communities, committing over the next year to 3 years to rebuild 54 schools. Those resources have been set aside. The reality is, unfortunately, is we are actually running low on the relief resources. You end up with a quandary. Do you not build a school in a community to enable an additional clinic to be built to help a camp? And where do you put your resources? So we're finding there's always a tension between the longer-term reconstruction and the relief effort, but it is crucial that some resources not be spent on immediate relief and that some of those resources be available for longer-term reconstruction.
Let's hear from our listeners right here. Adios calling from Brockton, Massachusetts. Adios, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share some thought and opinion about my country, Haiti, which is I love dearly. 1 year after the earthquake, it seems like the earthquake just happened in Haiti. I want to thank the American people for the donation because they contribute a lot. They give about over $2 billion to Haiti. But yet, nothing has been done over there. I went there after the earthquake myself to visit. What we call tent, they're not tent. They're some plastic. If it's raining, any little broken, take them away. So we got so many NGOs over there. For me, they're not doing anything. It seems like they use the situation of Haiti to bewitch.
But Adios, we've all seen the food being distributed in the streets. We've seen the airport kept open. We've seen even water brought in. Lots of doctors down there. Hasn't that amounted to something?
Tom, there's surely just a little piece of the situation. Some area still, people are still under the debris. That's something that's unacceptable. And I'm not going to blame the Haitian government because you know why? Because they claim they don't have enough credit. They don't give them no money. They give the money to the NGOs. So the NGOs did not do exactly what they're supposed to be doing.
Adios, I appreciate your call. We've got to take a short break. We're going to come back and look at all of this. We're talking about Haiti 1 year after the quake. A lot of aid poured down there, and a lot of relief was brought. Are things where they could be, where they should be? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. Sam Worthington, Tom Adams, Marlene Bastien, please stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Haiti 1 year tomorrow after the quake and what's happened. with all the billions in relief, what's happened with the Haitian people? And we know, we should be clear here, credit where credit is due. A lot of people have poured their hearts out in relief work in Haiti, and many Americans, maybe half of American families, have poured out their resources to help this very poor country. But where do things stand compared to where they might be, where they ought to be? Tom Adams is with us today. He is the State Department's Special Coordinator for Haiti, on top of the big picture here out of Washington. Sam Worthington is with us, Chief Executive of Interactions, the largest alliance of U.S.-based international NGOs with members working in Haiti. Oxfam, Mercy Corps, CARE, Save the Children, World Vision, and a lot more. He's just back from Haiti. And from Miami, Marlene Bastien is with us, founder and executive director of Haitian Women of Miami. She's paying a lot of attention there. You can join us at 800-423-8255. Let's get a call from Omaha, Nebraska, and Stuart. Stuart, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. thank you for focusing on this, Tom, and I hope that you would do a similar program for on other countries in Latin America. My main comment is this. Haiti needs less charity and more justice. There's two issues that are missing here in the discussion. Number one is the elections. The Haitian people really do not have the right to elect their own government. Aristide and the Lavalas party remains very, very popular, and yet they're not even on the ballot. How can a country rebuild itself if they can't have democracy? Number two, subsidized rice from the U.S. basically ruined Haitian agriculture. How can a country rebuild its economy when cheap rice from the United States is still flooding into the country?
Stuart, would you hang on? Let me put those to Tom Adams. Stuart, stick with us. Tom Adams, what do you say to these two points, the political process in Haiti, the health of democracy there, and how that may be important to rebuilding? And what about on the agricultural front? How do you respond, Tom?
Yeah, those are both good questions. And as Marlene has pointed out, Haiti not only suffered from the earthquake, but it has now really an electoral crisis, and it's also had cholera introduced on top of all of its other problems. On the elections, they were held November 28th. Almost immediately, the opposition parties shouted fraud. There were some indications that there was fraud. The United States withheld kind of approval of the election process and sought to have a validation process in place. This has occurred. The government of Haiti asked the Organization of American States to send an expert group down to take a look at the election's results. They worked for the last several weeks and are due to release their report at the end of this week.
I don't know how that, I'm not sure what bottom line to draw out of that. Do you see the political situation there as a major impediment to rebuilding? I mean, there was talk a year ago that, hey, you know, the whole world is focused on Haiti now. Maybe we can come and turn this in, to a kind of wonderland compared to where it had been. Put it on a whole new path. Was that dreaming? Are political realities in the way of even simple rebuilding, Tom?
Well, I do think anybody who's dealt with Haiti would say that was dreaming. It's not that Haiti can't be rebuilt. It's just the timeline is probably a decade or more before it really reaches where it should be. On the political process, we would hope that the OAS recommendations get them through this crisis, because it is important for Haitians to feel that their votes count, that they are a democracy, they're a sovereign country. And the people of Haiti have a right to choose their own leaders. So you do need a government that has the confidence of its people. The other problem there, quite frankly, is that the government of Haiti had very low capacity even before the earthquake. The earthquake killed an estimated 15% of government workers. Many others emigrated. Estimates are as much as 40% of the government workforce is no longer there. So one of the tasks the international community is doing in concert with the government of Haiti is trying to build capacity so that the government can deliver the services its people needs.
Stuart, in Omaha, does that get to your concerns?
Well, I didn't hear anyone talk about Lavalas and Aristide, who wasn't even on the ballot, and I still haven't heard anything about the agricultural situation.
Tom, let's go at it one more time on those two fronts specifically.
Sure. Lavalas, in the end, could not agree on a candidate in this elections. So they did not actually seek to run in these elections. There were four or five opposition candidates claiming to have the mantle of Lavalas in these elections, and there was a broad spectrum. There were 19 presidential candidates. One dropped out, but 18 candidates running in the presidential elections and many parties. So there was a real choice for Haiti here. On the agricultural front, I think this is an important issue. About 60% of Haitians live on farms. They have very low productivity. And in the end of the day, in Haiti, we have to create jobs. This recovery will not be self-sustaining without that.
Has U.S. agricultural export policy knocked them off their agricultural base?
I think initially the flood of food did distort the economy. So we have cut back on feeding programs and are using cash for work to try to put the economy back on a more market-oriented production. We are also have been working there quite successfully to raise farmer incomes. We believe that farmers can double or triple their income with sort of basic agricultural extension help.
I don't want to beat it to death, but on Stewart's question, I think he was referring to, you know, U.S. exports, not relief aid, not relief food, but just agricultural policy in general undercutting Haitian rice farmers with U.S. rice exports. Has that been a problem?
Actually, there have been some studies that show that actually U.S. rice did not damage the local rice crop. The problem in Haiti is it's made up of lots of very small 1-hectare farms that are not competitive in the world. So if Haiti puts high tariffs on food imports, it makes food expensive for the people. If they lower those, it makes their agriculture less competitive. But that said, we can make their agriculture more competitive. There are even some export opportunities, mangoes, coffee, and other things. So we have been working quite successfully to increase farmer income, which is key. The other area we've been working on jobs is Haiti has the HELP Act, which gives generous import tariff treatment into the United States. And we have worked to design two large industrial zones, one up north near Cap Haïtien, one on the outskirts of Port-au-Prince, that will employ a considerable number of workers in various industries, mostly the textile industry, but also in furniture manufacturing and other things.
I can imagine Stewart in Omaha thinking that that may be great, but even low productivity, rice farming might be a job right now, and I appreciate that call from Omaha. Tom, forgive me, but I want to go to Marlene for a second on this issue of Haitian politics. Marlene Bastien in Miami, do you see Haitian politics as having been a or the major stumbling block to a faster recovery and rebuilding here?
I believe it does, because no grain of democracy can grow in a land of injustice. And like the caller rightly mentioned, the Lavalas Party, by all accounts, is still the most popular on the ground, and they were excluded. They were indeed excluded. That's one. Second, Haiti has many problems, but it's been blessed with fertile lands. And I think I disagree with Tom in this. I respectfully disagree, and I beg to differ. I believe that we need to start investing in Haiti's agriculture. There was a time when Haiti, the pearl of the Antilles, was feeding Europe. We were the first producer of rice, of coffee beans. We had the best coffee beans anywhere in the world.
But these days that requires productivity, right? Exactly.
And we can put people to work, Tom. We can put people to work, create jobs. Haiti's people, they are our best assets. People want to work. They want to work. So let's invest in agriculture. Instead, and Tom, you know, you've heard this from me at our recent meeting. Instead of buying water pills, let's invest and build the infrastructure to give potable water to the 10 million. It's only 10 million. It's a small nation. Let's do that. Let's invest in agriculture and feed everyone on the nation. The peasants of Haiti, they are dying. dying. They are forced to leave their villages to go to Port-au-Prince because they have no means to cultivate their lands. Let's invest in agriculture. The American people, they opened their hearts after the hurricane. I am hard-pressed to meet one American who did not contribute something after the earthquake, and they expected more. The people of Haiti expected more. Let's start from the basis. Let's invest to rebuild the agriculture.
Marlene, let me get another caller here, if I may. Montreal, Canada. John, thanks for calling. You're on the air, John.
Yes. What I have to say is the same thing that the lady has said. You know, a lot of money has been given for the Haitian people after the earthquake. And from now to 1 year after, we are at the same level of the investment of the organization, the international organization and the national organization in the country. And we know exactly what to do. It's to feed the people. And to feed the people, you have to help the people feeding themselves by investing in agriculture, by investing in education, by investing in health care. You know, and then after that, we have to start, rebuilding shelters for the people. You know, building that give people apartment and work with the government instead of keeping the money in the bank. And then the people have nothing yet. You know, that's we have to emergencies on the short term have to be done.
John, I appreciate your call. I want to go to Sam Worthington, if I may. And Sam, let me come back again to one of your member organizations, Oxfam, talking about a crippling combination in this last year of what they call Haitian government indecision. And, they say, rich donor countries' too frequent pursuit of their own aid priorities. What do you make of those two complaints, Sam?
Well, I think that donor countries need to come through with their pledges, and many countries have. I think the U.S. has probably been the best one actually coming through compared to many others. In terms of direction from the Haitian government, the interim commission did provide a broad frame and a direction to go. It is translating that frame down to an operational level, which is what we're really asking. And that is a shift to bring it down to be more clear as to what is meant over time in terms of investing.
What are the priorities? You hear our caller from Montreal saying invest in agriculture, invest in education, invest in healthcare. Are those on your priority list?
Yes, they are. And what we've done, and I think it's important to get sort of transparency of the NGO community. I can't talk about all nonprofits investing in Haiti, but for our members, and about 15 of them make up about 93% of the resources going in, we have a map which can be found at our website at interaction.org/Haiti that shows for 67 NGOs over 500 projects throughout the country, by water, by health, by livelihoods, by investment in food security efforts and so forth. Many of those efforts are not in Port-au-Prince. They're throughout the country. It is recognizing that we need to make these investments in multiple areas over time. U.S. nonprofits will be in Haiti for the next 10, 20 years. Primarily, almost exclusively staffed by the Haitian people, working in all these different areas. And it requires a degree of longer-term commitment at the same time as we are involved in working in the camps in this difficult transition to reconstruction.
Let me get one more call. Boston, Fran. Thanks for calling. Fran, you're on the air.
It's good to be with you, Tom, on this particular issue. I am caught in a quandary as a management ethicist. And I work globally, and I'm really appreciative that Tom Adams is with us, as well as the others who are adding their expertise. There are two things about Haiti that put me in a quandary. They have no governance, none. They have no decision-making. They have absolutely, number two, no ethics. They are really down on the whole list of Transparency International, list of corrupt nations. Until we fix those two, and I have tried to tell through Hillary Clinton at the State Department that we have resources to help with this. We are operationally doing ethical decision-making around the world with many of our people in my organization. There is a tension between the short-term and the long-term. We have this humanitarian effort, and I and many others in my organization and throughout the world have given and text and done what we could. But I will tell you, and I will tell you very, very firmly, that until the effort is made through their State Department, our State Department, the whole country should be turned into not an election group, but a governance group. There should be some way of interacting, because pouring money into it is not going to do the job of cleaning up Haiti.
Friend, you raise enormous issues, and our time grow very short here. Tom Adams, I'm sure you've got a long answer, but I'm going to go to Marlene Bastien to respond to that. No governance, no ethics, therefore no effective rebuilding. What do you say to that formula, Marlene? What can be done?
Well, I believe that the state of Haiti needs to be held responsible. Yes, there is corruption, but the Haitian government is not the only institution that is corrupted. The NGOs are as much corrupted. I think we need to hold the Haitian government responsible, the state of Haiti responsible. And that's why I will put the burden on the state of Haiti, because it has to start with them. We have been pouring millions of dollars, 30,000 Haitian NGOs, 110,000 foreign aid organizations. The country is in worse conditions a year later. So we have to have a better strategy for Haiti, and it has to start with the Haitian people. So, yes, we have corruption, but which country doesn't have corruption? Which country? The NGOs are corrupted. The foreign and local NGOs are corrupted. So we need to hold the Haitian government, the state of Haiti, responsible. They need to develop a national dialogue in the nation and develop a strategy to put Haiti on the road to development. No one else will do it. No one else has to do it. We have to do it with the assistance of our friends.
It's a complicated picture. I don't want to end this hour without once again expressing our gratitude to all those who pitched in for Haiti and all those who have gone down with blood, sweat, and tears and worked in Haiti, and the Haitian people for their big effort on this. Clearly, there's a lot more to dig into here, and we will do it. Marlene Bastien in Miami, I want to thank you very much for being with us this hour. Tom Adams at the State Department, Special Coordinator there. Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
And Sam Worthington with Interaction. Thanks for joining us, Sam. This is On Point.